And even with netback and spotback deals that are going on all over the place, assuming somebody can figure out what the true selling price is of oil, once the tax was imposed, it would probably be reflected almost fully in the crude price within the United States, even with exemptions for Mexico and Canada and maybe even Venezuela. I don't see how they could totally back out other foreign oil from our market and basically therefore nullify the tax. So I guess a tax that is put on both crude and refined products, and one that's kind of pegged to a fixed price like $22, probably work and raise the price of crude pretty close to $22, would obviously then mean quite a bit of additional revenue for the state. And that's basically all I have to say.
Representative Pichot.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you comment a little bit more on the $22? You said we don't know what the price is, and presumably we would want a tariff that would cushion against an unreasonably precipitous fall or an unreal fall, but clearly we are getting, I would maintain, into economic problems if you are maintaining an artificially high price over the longer run, and $22 may be $4 or $5 over the so-called true price, at least in the next 10 years or so. Do you have a problem?
Well, laws can always be adjusted if that turned out to be true, and that in the long run the price wasn't coming back up. I guess my own feeling would be that over a half decade or so, we would find probably the selling price coming back up above $22, and it'd be wiped out.
You know, I spent a little time in D.C. a few years back, and it was a time when both gas deregulation and oil deregulation were going through, and it is the most excruciating, convoluted process you ever saw. And when you get vested interests of people tied to a price of oil, regardless of what it is not a simple matter of just rolling it back from 22 to 1750 or to 15. And it's a very onerous legislative thing that involves more constituency groups than anybody could ever imagine.
I don't know what the right price is, whether $22 is a little high or a little low. I guess what I do feel is a correct statement is unless you have a tax that kind of pegs it and says, hey, it will be X dollars, and we're going to put a tax in the place that makes it that regardless, it probably won't work. With the netback deal, especially that Saudi Arabia is doing, if you put a percentage kind of tax on, you run a real risk that the price won't change, that it would just maybe be rolled out. And the Saudis would pick it back up to a large degree. And so if we really want to raise the price, preserve the markets in the United States, and I only think it makes sense if you assume that this is a short-run dip, then this kind of tax is probably the more effective, most effective kind you could put on. Because when you look at the other kinds, you get the possibility that you only get a small fraction of the tax showing up in the form of a higher price.
There's nothing in the resolution that would indicate this $10 tax, so that's.
Mr. Chairman, that's true. There are two different. As Tom said, there are competing proposals. There are several different proposals, but if the House resolution is the same as mine, it doesn't reflect a specific price or even a specific bill.
I felt it was much easier for me to kind of reflect on a particular bill, and the bill that I included is the tax is the difference between $22 and the average of those three oils that I mentioned.
Thank you.
average price for those rooms.
Mr. Cotton, did you have a question?
I just want to know if the representatives from Exxon or ARCO are going to testify today. Therefore, I'd like to ask Tom, how can we figure out what the industry reaction might be on a proposal like this? Would you think about whether or not a company sold to themselves or whether or not a company sold to other parties? What would be a way to determine?
I believe, from my readings, most of the companies have come out either neutral or against such an increase in the price.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cotton, the ratio of domestic production and international production, isn't that a key factor in how an oil company...
It used to be 50-50.
Well, if your production were all in the United States and your sales were in the United States, you couldn't lose under such a tax. You basically are pushing some of the foreign oil out and raising the price for the domestic product. I guess the implications would be if what would happen to these so-called windfall profits, whether there might be another bill right on the heels of the first one, and how maybe they perceive that as to whether a domestic producer would be in favor of the bill. And I'm not sure how they all figure that out when they play their strategic games. If you're an importer, of course, then it makes life a lot more difficult for you in the sense that there is a wedge being driven between what it really costs you to produce and what you have to sell it for. And there might be advantages there for domestic producers.
Mr. Chairman, we have a two-page synopsis here of the bill, which makes some interesting points. I'd like to request that whoever wrote that be allowed to speak.
He's not here. His staff wrote it. Wrote up the report. But you'll see the backup there. There's a number of articles that were gathered. And as I mentioned, Senator Josephson, that we requested some of the articles he had, because majority of the ones we gathered in the different periodicals were opposed to it, and probably for some of the reasons that Mr. Chester explained. But staff returns, I'll be glad to have him address the memo. Representative Cotton?
Could I try to put my friend Bob and Bev on the spot again? Would you say that the people you represent are neutral? I see a nodding of a head from representative from Exxon. What about the representative Marco? You can just say you prefer not to answer if you want. I'm just trying to understand.
I have just a brief
I really was interested in what you had what your thoughts were on it. So that's, I think that was pretty good. I appreciate that. Thank you.
I think a lot of the articles that were gathered were certainly when the price of oil was 14, 15, 16. It wasn't when they are 11 or 12 or 9 or 10 or whatever they are now. Other questions of the witness? Tom, thank you very much for your testimony. I would like to give David
Rayon.
I'm David Rayom. I'm with Alaska Economics here in Juneau. And I'm going to be as brief as I can. I have trouble understanding why this is being treated as such a complex question. I think I can solve some of the problems for you, or at least give you what I believe to be solutions for them. Just to lay some numbers on the table, if a $5 per barrel oil import fee were levied, I calculate ballpark type prices, that that would yield something on the order of $6.5 billion at the national level. And if the dollar rise in price equals $150 million for Alaska is applicable, would translate into something like a half a billion dollars extra revenue to the state of Alaska. So you're talking about, in terms of the oil import fee that, that Mr. Chester was talking about, $10, you're talking about in the vicinity of half a billion to $1 billion extra for the state of Alaska in the short run. So that's the immediate impact that is essentially being viewed here. Now, the reason I give you that number, or should I say one of the hidden assumptions behind it, is fully in agreement with what Tom said, and that's that in the short run, essentially most of the initial increase would show up in domestic prices. In fact, my calculations assume only 70% would. All right. That's kind of a middling estimate based on some research that's been done by a lot of different people over a period of time. And that would change if, as the oil price went up over time, if there was general tendency for prices to rise. So I say the question is simple because viewed solely from the point of view of the interest of the state of Alaska as a state, it's hard to see any argument that could go against wanting to get an extra half a billion to $1 billion. Okay, that strikes me as simply there for all to feel and see. Now, we're not simply Alaskans. We're also Americans. We have a national interest to take account of. And with respect to that, I don't think it's all that difficult to perceive either. I happen to agree with Representative Moreau on some of the intentions of the Saudis. I don't think the Saudis ever thought that they were going to whiplash the United States into becoming heavily dependent on oil again, primarily because I think the Saudis expected us to do something like this. The rest of the world has this sort of import duty levied, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if some of my friends from graduate school are sitting back gleefully wondering when the United States is going to come around to do this sort of thing. You know, it wasn't something they planned on, but they'll take it as long as it's there. And I really think that those are two considerations that will clarify things. Now, I happen to think that the oil companies that operate in Alaska are exceedingly important to this economy. And I have a theory, and it's only a theory, as to why their position is what it is. I suspected it would be this, and I think it's fairly simple. An oil import duty is contrary to the interests of foreign producers. All right. Oil companies, even a Sahio, which presently has precious little out of U.S. production, has to deal with these foreign countries, and to take a public position in favor of an oil import duty would strike me as a politically silly thing for them to do, and as such, I can't imagine an oil company taking such a position. Okay, I have a number of other comments here that went to things I had addressed earlier. One that I want to go to right now is relevant with respect to the issue of the impact on consumer prices. You ought not to translate this sort of thing into simply inflation terms. What we're dealing with here from the point of view of the national interest is an adjustment in relative prices. Okay? We have decided in our collective wisdom through the investments we've made since 1973, we have decided that we're going to live with high oil prices for a long period of time, and there are a lot of investments predicated on that. There's a lot of momentum that was moving in that direction. All right. Extremely low oil prices do tend to frustrate that, and I think that's one of the reasons why the administration is having some difficulty, because they're now recognizing two things. One, it isn't simply an inflation, non-inflation thing. It's an allocative issue. And two, thinking of the international oil market as a competitive market. For example, Representative Peugeot, your analysis of the or reference to your to the deadweight triangles, those types of things are useful pedagogical tools, and in truth have empirical meaning as an approximate measure of loss, deadweight loss, only if you can reasonably describe the market as competitive. And there's simply no way you can describe the international oil market as competitive. So that kind of thing shouldn't even appear in the discussion. Okay, what you've got is you've got two parties of relative strengths waning and waxing over time, each of them trying to pursue their own special interests. Now, there are lots of secondary considerations that if you don't quantify them, complicate things. But if you stay with the large first-order considerations, then, in my opinion, the issue is simply this. An import duty is in the national interest, is totally unlikely to irritate the Saudis and others of countries who are producing, in my opinion, largely because they assumed long ago we would have had such a thing in place. And I also think that the other quantitative impact is extremely important, and a very happy occurrence that Alaska interest and the national interest happen to coincide is that it's a heck of a lot of money to the state of Alaska at a time when we probably could use it. So I'll leave it at that and respond to any questions you may have. But again, I my purpose in coming here was really to try to simplify what can be a very complex issue, but to possibly put it in some terms that will help you.
Any questions? Representative Frischel.
I'd just be curious as to your more general thoughts on import duties or tariffs in general.
Basically, free trade is a good intellectual argument. Whether or not you stay with it is a case-by-case type of thing. I can go even deeper than that, and maybe something that you'll be interested in. I think what we're seeing internationally now, when we see movement of manufacture away from the United States, are the very effects which were predicted by Paul Samuelson and others in the middle and late 1940s as the kind of effects that free trade can be expected to give you. Equalization of factor costs, meaning wages rise in the low-income country and so forth. If you're an internationalist and you take an international point of view strictly, that's absolutely a good thing. And I know one internationalist who argues that we ought to get even more and more interdependent because then we could never afford to go to war and things of that nature. But philosophically, I'm a free trader. I think that's the argument that has to be shown to be wrong, but I do believe that it has to be that there are individual merits on a case-by-case basis.
I just had one follow-up on that. You had referenced that the international oil market is not a competitive market.
No.
Is that based on because other countries have all of these imports? We do have world price of oil that our oil gets backed out if we charge one penny more for it, right?
Well, yeah, that's correct. Let me define what we mean by competitive. Okay. The everyday sense of competitive is if I give you an edge, you'll take advantage of it. Okay. I'm trying to get the most of you, and you're trying to get the most of me. That's the everyday sense of competitive. And in that sense, obviously, the international oil market is competitive. When you deal with the platitudes of economic analysis that many people carry away from their principles course, the one or two courses they've had, those platitudes only carry weight in a world that's competitive in an entirely different sense, a world of very small producers, none of whom can have much individual impact on what goes on. And that's not a world that you're dealing with when you're dealing with the international oil market.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Representative Rue, Mr. Sperber is back. He does have time constraints. So did you have a question that you want to ask Mr. Sperber? He's got to be out in the valley in about a half hour, but go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I did not have any particular questions. I find what he wrote here to be very interesting. I was just going to ask him to perhaps spell it out for the committee if he's interested.
My name is Jonathan Sperber. I work as staff to the House Special Committee on Oil and Gas. The two-page, say, memo of introduction to the newspaper articles, which were included behind, is just really based on some of the information, some of the perspectives that were brought forth in the articles. Really what we were trying to do was to take a look at a more national perspective in terms of how an import fee would be viewed, say, by industry, by consumers, more by the nation as a whole. I think very much of the feeling was an assumption that on a regional basis, by Alaskans being able to have, say, a greater price for the crude oil, the result would be additional revenues that Alaskans as a whole could enjoy. What we were trying to do here was just to take a greater look at how this type of legislation on a national scale would be received and what potential problems would ensue that in turn would indirectly come back to affect Alaska.
As I stated earlier, most of the articles that we were able to gather were ones that were actually in opposition, but we certainly weren't trying to cut off all the other things that have been gathered that we didn't have, and that's why I requested those from Senator Josephson. Senator Josephson, I think I sparked a question by you. Is that
only as I listened to this, and maybe David can comment on this or someone else. You know, we've been talking about free trade, but that, you know, we've also said here that the Saudi policy isn't just a conventional business strategy, that various people have different theories about it, that it has to do, Representative said, perhaps with the Iraq war and various matters that fall outside the realm of normal competitive practices. And I think that that is one of the places that when you have a free trade philosophy, you stop and look at when there are ulterior efforts to not promote free trade, but promote a cartel, for example, and we know that's going on here, that you can't, it's folly to say, well, I'm a philosophical free trader, so I'm going to be plowing ahead as if this other fellow wasn't trying to create an oligopoly or a cartel and control the market. And I just wanted to make that comment.
The chair would entertain a motion to move the bill out.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to make a small amendment to the bill.
We have a motion to move the bill out. Are you going to object to the motion?
Yeah, I'll object for the purpose of making an amendment.
All right.
Page.
Representative Cotton, you want to withdraw your motion so he can amend the bill? Okay.
Page 2, line 1, after the word oil, insert the words and refined products.
I'm sorry, I could have.
And refined products.
Added on what line?
Page 2, line 1, after the word oil. And refined products. I move mass unanimous consent for adoption of the amendment.
Is there any objection to the amendment? If there's no objection, the amendment is adopted. Representative Cotton.
I'd move that we pass the bill.
With individual recommendation?
Whatever. We pass the bill. Object.
You want to state your objection?
Mr. Chairman, without going into a lot of detail, we certainly heard a lot of detail. Protectionism of this sort has, by and large, never worked throughout history. It was tried extensively during the 1930s, just prior to the Second World War, along with an upsurge in nationalism.
Excuse me for a second.
And
are you're debating whether to pass the bill out?
I'm objecting to the bill for the reasons I'm attempting to enumerate.
We're not debating the merits of the bill now.
We're talking about moving it out of the democratic process here. Excuse me. Mr. Chairman, do I have the floor, or continue to tolerate this?
I think there's some interest in getting out of here, being that we've run at least a half hour longer than I wanted to. But go ahead, state your objection, and then we'll take a vote.
Hopefully I object to the bill because, as I was saying, protectionism of this sort has, by and large, never worked. Only thing it does is temporarily delay the inevitable, similar to what I think perhaps Representative Pershaw is alluding to. And it does drive up prices for consumers within the country, which is attempting to protect the industry within the country, because certainly any tax that anybody is going to have to pay on imported oil or refined products is going to be passed along to the consumer, the American people, or the Alaskan people. And there is much more to be gained, in my opinion, in both the Alaskan and the American economy by having cheaper energy than by having more expensive energy. For these and a number of other reasons, including the allusion to Dr. Samuelson, under whom I studied at the Institute, one of the world's leading exponents of Keynesianism, I object to this bill.
Keynesianism?
Is there a further objection?
Well, I certainly respect your right to object to the bill, but trying to let the minority get a bill to the floor of the House so the democratic process can be sued here and we can discuss this and hold on.
We'll go ahead and take a vote then. All those in favor, raise your hand. I'm moving the bill up as amended. Those opposed? Motion carries. The bill moves from the committee and
stifle the democratic process.
If there's no further business to come before the committee, it means adjourned.
Do we have a copy of the bill here?
I don't want to sign it first. I want to
sign it. Hey, give me that.
Where do you sign it?
No rack.
A strong rack. It should be. Don't.
But I sure enjoyed the conversation today.
It was interesting. This last one was too long.